We'd like the ship to go. Now.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Discussing Trek. We are back to review yet another episode of Star Trek Discovery, Season 5, Episode 7, Iraga. And like always, I have on the podcast with me none other than Mr. Jones. How are you doing, Cal?
I'm doing quite well. Looking forward to having positive discussions about a show. So, woohoo. Glad to be here.
Yeah, positive. Because there is no show out there that people have various conflicting views on right now. None.
Exactly. So I'm not even going to go there. We'll wait until tomorrow night to go there. But let me just say that I am getting patient impaired with people. Let me just say that.
Bring the calls out, dude. That's what I say.
So, but yes, I am absolutely glad to be here.
And also on the podcast, we have none other than Larry Irby. How you doing, dude?
I'm doing great. Glad to be here. I'll have to watch you guys tomorrow while I'm at work. So,
yeah, man. Glad to have you back and happy belated birthday here.
Thank you. It's hard to be 21 again.
Well, you know, I've been 21 like 20 times now. So,
Well, I can't tell you how many times because then I tell the truth.
You give yourself away. Let me say hello to everyone in the chat. We have Tasha from After the Snap Movies and TV. We have Wynn Grace from Wynn Grace Project. We have Brittany in the chat as well. Thank you all for being here to talk this one out. And we are, of course, we're here to review Star Trek Discovery Season 5, Episode 7, Iraga. With Maul and Locke finally in custody, the Federation is pulled into a diplomatic and ethical firestorm when the Breen arrive and demand they be handed over. Meanwhile, a frustrated Book looks for ways to help as Tilia, Dur, and Reno work to decipher the latest clue.
Alrighty, so for everyone listening, if you have not seen this episode, go out, watch it, come back, because from the next moment forward, spoilers.
Spoilers.
Red alert. All hands stand to battle station.
What gives you the right?
You cannot destroy an idea.
At ease before you sprint.
No, let them spoil them all.
The spoiler warning has been dropped, and we are back to review this episode. And like always, we go back to Mr. Jones for the beats of the episode, sometimes serious, sometimes comedic. Honestly, you never know. Mr. Jones, what do you have for us today?
All righty. So thinking about this episode, here we go. I found it a little bit standoffish. Cha-ching.
Cow with the puns. He's a punny dude. You're a very punny dude, man.
I love that. I'm a punny dude. Oh, man.
Let's go around the horn and get high-level thoughts of the episode. Reinhardt, you're returning, man. Let's start with you. What did you think of Iraga?
I enjoyed this one. I enjoyed this one a lot more than I did the last episode. I didn't get to give you my take on that, but I like this one quite a bit. And we'll get into it.
Awesome sauce, Cal.
You know, I'm going to mirror what Larry said. I enjoyed this quite a bit. I liked the setup of the story. I liked the way it unfolded, and I enjoyed watching it. And honestly, I ended the episode wanting more. So isn't that the ultimate thing that any writer wants, is you want more and you run out and see the credits? So yeah, I enjoyed it. What about you?
Oh, man, I really enjoyed this episode. And as we often say when we go back and watch it again for the review, you know, the first time I watched it on my computer, and this time, once again, I watched it on the big TV. And man, this is such a beautiful show. Such a beautiful show. All the sets in this episode just looked fantastic. The lighting, the CG sequences that we had of the ships, I just felt like I think this one is going to age really well. And I know we said that about the last episode, but man, this is just such a beautiful episode to watch. And added to boot, a very good, well-written story, and giving us the deets to push the season a little bit further. So, man, I absolutely love this episode. So, Breen Blood Bounty, Iraga. What do you guys think about the Breen entering into the fray here, coming after our proverbial Bonnie and Clyde in this episode? Did we see that coming at all? Because, you know, we kind of foreshadowed it a little bit when we had the flashback of Maul and Locke, but I really didn't think we were going here. thoughts on the Breen entering the fray, Cal?
So I, not that I really wasn't expecting it, but I thought that they had to do something because we're running out of episodes. So you had to do something to push the story along. And I think they wanted to give us the visual that we see when they do arrive so that they could have that nod. And I know you'll probably get into it, but they would have that nod to something that was foreshadowed previously. But they've made the Breen into such a ultimate bad guy, sort of, that just kind of, I know where you were kind of going with that, I think, because it just kind of felt like, okay, now they're here, and this is not the finale, so what's going to be the finale?
Yeah, because this felt like an epic episode to me, just from the scale of the production and the costuming, the sets. Reinhardt, the Breen. How do you like the way they're being portrayed in this season, as compared to what we've seen before, and how they've sort of kind of filling in a gap maybe for some other race of alien that we could possibly have in Star Trek?
I love having the Breen in this show. I love when you have something you haven't explored, but it's been on the periphery and you explore it. I will say one thing I am not in favor of. That Breen ship is way too damn big. It's almost ridiculous. It's like, wait, so the Breen were just a regular Alpha? I mean, you know what their ships look like from the Dominion War. And it's like, well, that's like a cube. It's massive. Like you could put 8, 9, 10 of the Federation ships in there. And this is a mistake sometimes they make by making the who's supposed to be the antagonist somewhat, okay, overpower.
Mm.
I mean, because they could have took out every ship there.
Mm. All right, let me push back just a little bit real quick. Not that I disagree with your statement in regards to they could overpower. I totally agree with it. But if you look at it from the Dominion War, from what we've seen previously, let's not forget that that was 800 or 900 years ago. And a good analogy, if we want to look at real world and put into context of real world, in the 1940s and especially, you know, in the decades immediately following, Germany was looked at as one of the, you know, a bad actor, so to speak, especially, you know, in the late 1940s, early 1950s. You go up 75, 80 years, 90 years, or however many years in the future, and Germany is not that. I mean, by all accounts, they're as much as the United States is, you know, in regards to looking favorably. So if you take that context into the Breen, I could see where in 800 years they could have vastly changed their technology and whatnot.
Well, the only reason I feel that way is, so you're telling me the Breen did that quantum leap in technology, but the Federation, which, like I said, I understand that the Federation kind of broke up, but Starfleet was still there. It seemed a little much for me.
No, I totally agree. I just wanted to like push back and give the other. So I'm not disagreeing with you in any way.
Let's make it this big grand entrance.
Yeah, like, Marge makes a good point about the Breen homeworld, which I'm guessing we've never been to the Breen homeworld. We've only seen their point of view from ships. I'm doing some research on the fly here. There is a Breen homeworld, but again, we've never seen it to the best of my knowledge.
Yeah, maybe it doesn't exist anymore. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe they just inhabit these big old massive ships. It kind of reminded me of the ship. Was it the end of season one? Was it a Klingon ship that was like extra huge?
Yeah, the sarcophagus ship.
Well, no, it was like a destroyer or something else. It may have been in season two.
The
Cleave ship, yes.
That was same ridiculous.
Thing. Massive.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's a little weird. To me, it felt way too big, obviously. But yeah, speaking of these ships that you were talking about from, I guess, the DS9 era, you know, a lot different, a lot smaller. So yeah, asymmetrical, like you mentioned. Yeah, very, very different. Very different. Or was it Wind Grace that mentioned the asymmetrical? asymmetrical here. Let's see. Let's pull up his comment. The Marine ships were cool in DS9 because they were so asymmetrical. I wish they had retained that. Yeah, they dumped that for size. So, yeah.
And maybe that's what. Let me push back against my own comment. Maybe that's one of their capital ships, so to speak. And they probably have other smaller vessels. And maybe they just wanted to say, hey, look, you mess with us.
We learned a lot in this episode. We learned that there are, and this reminded me, you know, to me, I mentioned it up top, but they're kind of like the Klingon stand-in to me in some ways, because they mentioned that you had these factions. I think they gave a number like 6 or 7 factions that are vying for power since, I'm guessing, the Emperor died or is dead. I don't know if they said it specifically that the Emperor was dead.
I think he's dead.
And the interesting thing here is you have a descendant of the Emperor, which we learned in this episode, Locke, who is it's kind of interesting because I don't, of course, he does not want to rule. He is running from all his responsibility. But there's another twist in it that these Primarchs want to use him as just, I guess, the face of the ruling. They really rule in the background. Is that kind of what you guys got from it?
That's kind of what I got, because I was trying to think of, well, he's not, you know, he doesn't have that claim without Locke. So my thought was the uncle's wife, I'm assuming, our spouse, whoever his spouse was, is Locke's bloodline, because that's how, if you know, he's using Locke to hold on to that chain of lineage.
Yeah, I found all of that very interesting. And, you know, it's this good old Game of Thrones. We're battling for the next, you know, who can rule it all. So I found that very interesting that they kind of folded that into the brain, how the brain operate. So yeah, you have like a civil war ish stuff going on there between the Breen people. Very interesting. So, let me just talk about one of my biggest gripes of this episode. So we got so many cool characters came back. We had Tatrina, we had Vance, we had Reno coming back for a large part episode, but what was even more, and we had, of course, Nan coming back. Yeah, that was awesome.
My girl.
But to me, what was even more weird about this episode was the fact that so many people were missing.
Yes.
I mean, no Detmer, no Owo. Of course, Doug Jones wasn't there. And the president, Rilik, wasn't there. So many people that you kind of expect to be somewhere in this episode were kind of missing. But what did you guys think of the return of Nan in this episode?
Well, before we say the return of her, let me add this. This makes me wonder how much their budget was cut toward the end, because I keep getting the feeling that, and no diss to the ones who are on the bridge now, but I see them more as day players because we really don't know them. So they're probably paying a fraction of what even they were paying Owo and Detmer and Bryce and et cetera and so forth. So I'm again wondering, and look, you've got Doug Jones is gone for 3 or 4 episodes in a row.
Yeah, I do know the lady who plays Detmer is doing a movie. I don't know about the rest of them. She's doing something else. And I know Doug Jones is in post-production on another movie. I don't think it's with Guillermo, but it's another dude that they work with.
Yeah, I think he was doing Hocus Pocus 2 press tour during the filming of this.
Yeah, that might be for this, because I know, of course, he was in Hocus Pocus 2.
Yeah, so some of them have reasons, but still, it does still feel strange that so many people are kind of missing in action. But again, I have to say, having Nan return, I think, was a welcome treat. You know, really didn't expect that. But to have her not only come back to play such a big role, and I say that with a giggle because I did my little impulse video, my first reactions, and my title was Non-Security Detail is Trash, which, you know, Maul pretty much took them all out with, you know, relative ease.
I have one I have to throw out there, this one, guys. Okay, Maul and Locke were captured, right? You know what? I loved it. Thank God there are other competent people in the Federation. It gets old, the main ship. Oh, we're the only ones can catch them. No, there's other people. We know how to do our job, too. I said that, and I said, man, only I'm a true Star Trek fan, because only I could appreciate, and we could appreciate that, because I went, damn, somebody else caught them. About time. It ain't always got to be the main cast to do everything.
Yeah, to me, it aids and or it goes to show that I think the writing was just better in a lot of instances this season. The season has flowed relatively well, and we're doing a bunch of different stuff. So maybe sometimes some stuff can go in the background. We'll just hear that it happened, and we'll catch up to it. And that's kind of what we did here with them. I want to pick up a comment real quick. Wingrave saying, they said that if I cannot use him in life, I will use him in death. Maybe they literally need his genes to plug into something. Huh. So it may be some genetic thing that is needed to rule. That's interesting. I haven't really thought about that one. That's a pretty good one, Wingrave.
See, I took that a little differently. I took it as beforehand I was using him for the lineage. Now I'm going to use his death as a catalyst to incite a war, to make myself look bigger, you know, make me look like, look, you know, kind of beat your chest kind of thing. Look at what I can do.
And I have to say, the reveal that Maul and Locke were married was interesting. That never even crossed my mind for some reason. But we find with that marriage comes some certain benefits. So help me out here. Does that mean that Maul could be the next Breen emperor or ruler because she was married to the direct descendant? Any thoughts on that?
Maybe that's the twist at the end.
Yeah, I don't think she can, because he told us you'll never be accepted as one of us. But I think we know what she wants is to find that tech. She thinks maybe she can revive him.
That's what I think.
Yeah, which Nunn does mention, because Burnham tells Nunn to scan the book. Let's get all the details. And she mentions at the end that there was some component to bringing or reviving people or something to that extent. So, yeah, I think this is where we're going, unfortunately. I kind of wish we could stick with the fact that he's dead and let's live with the repercussions. In a very Game of Thrones sense, once you're dead, you're dead. Unless you're that guy I'm not going to mention because it's a huge spoiler. But, yeah, so I don't know. I don't know if I love that.
But just because she's wanting to do it doesn't necessarily mean it's done. That's her motivation. That doesn't mean that that's going to be the reality.
That's true.
I was lucky enough. I got to watch Trek Culture, and they had the actor who plays, Locke on there.
Yeah, Elias Tofexis.
That guy's so awesome. He's so good in The Expanse. Everything he's in, he's really good in. But he is a massive Trekkie, big time, like went to conventions and everything. And I just think that's so cool to imagine him playing this character. And when he said he found out, they told him, well, what character? He did the plaster and stuff. He didn't know what the character was. He's like, oh, yeah, you're going to be a Breen. And he was like, what? You're from DS9? I'm like, yeah, you're going to be the first Breen ever seen.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
Ooh. Pick up that comment from Wingrave. I think that is very good.
Wingrave is saying, I think the twist will be that in order for the progenitor tech to bring about life, it needs to take a life. Yeah, but who would sacrifice their life for our Locke? Of course, we know who that probably could be, but yeah, that's interesting. Interesting.
That would be a switch if she had to give her life for his.
Mm. Or to prove, ooh, this is good. What about if it's Book to prove to her that, you know, her being Maul, that the name Book was valid or whatnot?
It could be. It's the last season.
That makes a lot of sense, Kyle, but I don't want to believe it because, you know, I've been saying ever since Book kind of came into the picture, I've been saying, oh, man, I wish Book would kind of take a backseat and Let's get more of the other characters. This season, he's taken, for the most part, he's kind of taken a back seat. We've even seen him wandering around a ship, twiddling his thumbs. Like, give me something to do. I'm not on the missions like I usually am. And I'm starting to really love Book, you know, this season. And if they do something like that, I would be very mad. Because now he's one of my favorite characters again. Because he took a small step back. Which I'll take that into talking about Burnham in this episode. One of the reasons I really love Burnham in this episode is because she wasn't really the main focus of everything going on. Negotiations, she's facilitating. Talking to Locke and Maul, she's facilitating. Getting the information from Rayner, she's facilitating. So although she was still connected to everything, she was more so like the kind of orchestrating it all in the trenches or from the background. Yeah, so I really loved her playing that role in this episode, and I found it kind of refreshing.
Oh, can you catch that one comment about the progenitors?
Fool Woodify saying, oh, did the progenitors sacrifice themselves in order to seed all other worlds? I'm trying to remember back to the episode, The Chase. I don't know if they ever stated that specifically.
I don't think they personally did, but that's a good, because when I saw that comment, it made me think of Prometheus. Yeah, we got to seed this world, so drink this liquid and then fall apart.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible that could be where they're going. They pretty much just said, I think in The Chase, they just said they kind of died out, but it could be that they died out because they were trying to push these seeds to all these other worlds. So yeah, that makes sense to me as well. So I want to pick up this comment too from Tasha saying that the next episode is all Burnham. It seems to be. I saw the preview. It does seem to be all Burnham. So we will get Burnham doing her thing in the next episode. Let's talk about the negotiations at Starfleet/Federation headquarters. I never know which one it is. Which one is it? Is it Federation headquarters or Starfleet headquarters, or is it both?
It's both.
I think it's both.
But yeah, we have Tarina kind of leading the negotiations because Relic is off on some other world. We don't want to bring her back because it's a security concern. But I really love Tarina in this episode. I think she really shined. What did you think about our Vulcan in this episode?
So I think she stole the show for me. She was the highlight to me of the entire episode. I liked the way the actor presented her poise, but also was firm when she needed to be. She was level when she needed to be. I think, again, it was just brilliantly acted and totally stole the show for me.
I'll say one thing about Tarina, I think, that I've noticed. While they are Vulcans, I mean, because they don't ever say how long that the Romulans and Vulcans have lived on Navarre, so we don't really know exactly how long it's been. But I think you can see a shift in their society, can't you? Because Tarina, even though she's still Vulcan and very logic, she's not as logically rigid. They don't seem to be as Vulcans used to be.
Yeah, even when she kind of stretched the truth or kind of made up something on the fly to keep the Marine there an additional hour, you know, isn't it true that Vulcans don't lie? Or if that's kind of what we've been told until they do.
Well, that's not true.
Yeah. So, yeah, I found her very interesting, her ability to kind of negotiate on the fly. Good stuff. And we also get notion that that our Killoran friend, Rayner, has had a run-in with the Breen. And it didn't go so well, folks.
Say the least. Like, they pretty much wiped out his family.
Yeah, yeah. And it may have been Tasha, or maybe Wingrace, one of those guys, mentioning that it's somewhat similar to kind of what we got from, forgetting the guy's name, from Picard. Shaw. Similar to Shaw's story in a little bit, you know, had a run in and now he's jaded about this particular race. But I think all of Raynard's points were valid, very much valid. And he comes back and was very instrumental in the negotiations later. So, you know, Burnham still able to keep him in check, and just her relatability to go talk to him and pull that part out of him, which he's been holding close to his chest. I thought that was really well done in the episode. Let's pick up a few comments here. went Gray saying, the Chase stated that they were alone and lonely in the galaxy, so they seeded life so they could have sacrificed themselves for the sake of a full galaxy. Yeah, I buy that. I certainly buy that. And Marge mentioning here that I love that Tarina knew the brain language. Yeah, that's classic. That's classic when somebody is just talking trash in front of you, and the diplomat is giving the watered down version of what the Primarch said, and she's like, "Nah, tell me the whole thing. You know, I know it." So that was great.
What Wingray said in the chat about them saying, "Yeah, they said they encountered no other life like their own." So I think they encountered life, other life form, but none like them, humanoid, what we call humanoid, you know. So I think that's why they helped seed those worlds, because I kind of feel like the progenitors and like the people from the Captain Kirk episode, the one where he was with the native people on that planet, I kind of feel like they're the same people.
Really?
I do. The preservers. Or the preservers are a later species. You know, it's kind of like, I don't want to mix genres here, but it's kind of like if you think about Halo, their lore, you have all these different groups that hand down the mantle to oversee life to the next group to protect the younger races so they can flourish. You know, maybe something like that. Just think about it. You got the progenitors, you got the preservers, and then after that, of course, we've got all the travelers and all the, and pretty much they all have the same goal to make sure that life continues to flourish.
Let me pick up Rittany's comment saying that there could be a Genesis take where the God breathed his life to make a man and took a piece of the man to make a woman. Basically, a self-sacrifice is used to make lives. Yeah, I mean, that kind of goes back to what you guys were saying, that they are just sacrificing themselves in order to procreate across the galaxy in their image. Yeah, good stuff there. Let's talk about the actual pursuit of the progenitor tech. We kind of have two factions working here. We have, well, first, Stamets pleads to Tilly to stay. She wanted to go protect her cadets. But we kind of have two factions here. We have Tilly and Adira, and we have Stamets and Book, both taking two very different approaches. Let's talk about Stamets and Book first. Again, I said Book does not know what to do. He twiddling his thumbs. First, he wants to interrogate Locke and Maul, but you know, Nan said, "We're not having that. You try to blow us up. Yeah, you going about your business." But he works with Stamets to try to figure out what's going on. At first, it really annoyed me that he used his empathy powers, telepathic powers, to figure out what was going on with this little metal piece that we learned is kind of like a library card. It really annoyed me at first. But again, going back and watching the episode, it's kind of brilliant. I really liked it. What did you guys think about Book using his empathetic, telepathic, his powers to actually read this disc and get some information? All right,
so unusually, I'm going to disagree with you. I actually loved it on first sight. You know, I like the fact that, number one, he didn't offer it up. It was asked of him to do that by Stamets. So it made a logical reason, because he's not going there to say, and if he, I would have been annoyed if he would have gone and said, "Hey, look, you know I can do this, and let me do this," and trying to worm his way in and push his way in. That would have annoyed me. But the way they just kind of organically let it happen, I liked that. And in regards to him trying to get in on the interrogation, two seasons ago, he would have just broke into the room or whatnot and went ahead and did what he wanted to. Whereas you can see character progression. The character has learned from past, and he just said, "Okay, I'm stepping back. Let me go find something else to do."
Yeah, I'm going to let you talk, Reinhardt, but I totally agree. I love the fact that it's not just instantly Book does what he wants to do. Burnham kind of puts him in his place a few times in this episode. And even, you know, she did the same thing in the Rainer, for that matter. So, yeah, I love that Book is taking a step back And it's just a little bit different. I like the dynamic a little bit more, but it's just not guaranteed. Reinhardt, thoughts on Book in this episode? Book and Stamets coming to the clue, conclusion on the clue. Any thoughts?
I enjoyed it. I thought it was fine. You know, that Book uses his power. I mean, because I'd rather sometimes do that than Harkin, like, oh, yeah, he had this coup power and we're never going to see it again. Because he hadn't used it in a long time. So that was okay with me. I love seeing him. I like seeing different combinations of people work together. And they've done a really good job of that this season. You know, let's not just have Book and Burnham together. Let's not just have Stamets and Colbert. We know they're a married couple. Let's not just have Detmer and Owa hanging out. Let's mix it up a little bit. And I enjoyed that.
So let me ask you guys a question. Larry, you mentioned, you know, Burnham and Book. Do you guys like the fact that they've sidelined the relationship between the two of them? And I know, you know, everybody on the ship still knows that they had a relationship. But do you guys like the fact that for all intents and purposes, it's a thing of the past at this point?
I do like it, but I like it in the fact that I don't think it could be the end. But at some point, you know, it's like, let's take a break here. Let's move on. Let's let other things happen, because things like that happen in life. So I think they eventually could find their way back to each other, which I would be fine with, too.
And that was part two of my question was, do you think that they will eventually, by the end, get back together?
If they're both still alive.
They are certainly 100% without a doubt going to find their way back to each other. We got a hint of that.
Maybe, but if they didn't, would that not be cool?
You know, we kind of got a hint of it when the time hopping episode where Burnham, you know, meets Book when they were in a good state. And she was kind of reminded of all that emotion and all the good times that they had. So I think by the end of the season, they're going to be back together. But, you know, I like seeing that progression of, you know, it's kind of the story in a ways of a lot of the storylines we see in Discovery. You're in a bad place and you work your way back to a good state. And that's what they're doing in a relationship. Just like Rainer, same thing. Working his way back into a good state. We've seen it time and again. So I think by the end of the season, they're going to be back together again.
Hey, which Star Trek can you name relationship where the two star-crossed lovers could no longer be together, but it was awesome?
Could no longer be together.
DS9. You had two pair, Odo and Kira.
Well, you had Sisko and Cassidy.
Mm-hmm.
And also you can even say Worf and Jadzia.
Yeah, but she got killed, though.
Did she, though?
Yes, she did.
The Dax symbiote was still around.
But yes, she did. No, that's fair. Just saying that was, sometimes I wouldn't mind if I had a Book, Burnham, I love you and I love you, but we got to go our separate ways. Sometimes it's for the best.
Hey, indeed. And by the way, I was talking about people not, I know we got to talk about Adira and Reno and Tilly, but where was Dr. Pollard, the chief medical officer, in this situation where we have such a crucial mission going on to bring this or to keep Locke alive? Dr. Pollard, nowhere to be found. Instead, we have my boy Wilson Cruz in this kind of winter coat, which is cool, mind you. He has some cool threads. But he's in his winter coat, you know, doing his doctor thing. Where's Pollard?
Pollard was off on mission with either Saru or with the president.
That's fair, but they didn't say that, did they?
I know they didn't, but I'm just saying that's two other places that we know characters are off screen at. Let her go there too.
Dr. Pollard's contract didn't get renewed. That's what that was.
Have we seen Dr. Pollard any this season?
Have we not? I thought we saw her at least once.
Did we?
Okay, research.
If we did, it was like in episode one.
Marge is saying she might be gone with Owen Detmer. Yeah. That's going to be our headcanon. That's what we're going to go with.
Well, that's what you got to go with.
So, guys, let's talk about Tilly and Adira. I love this duo together. And you know, when they hit a roadblock and can no longer kind of figure out what's going on, they're led to Reno, who we learned was a smuggler, a bartender, lied on her resume in order to get a Starfleet. I love Reno, man. This was awesome to see her kind of spearheading this little discussion, even though she was going about doing her normal job. You know, I got stuff to do. You could come along with me. A great time there with Reno. Really loved it. And it always awesome when Tignataro was back on board. So, yeah, I had a great time with that. Thoughts on Reno in this episode?
Well, we love Reno as always. I mean, that's just flawless. Like, yeah, just come with me. And she literally like mean, come with me. I got stuff I got to do. And I love that. But I got to be honest, the Adira and and Tilly thing, I didn't care.
Really? Why?
I don't know. It just struck me wrong. It's just like, they're going to solve the day. They're gonna I don't know. It just didn't hit me right. And I love Adira. I love Tilly. But that just didn't hit me right.
Well, to me, it was an example of how far Tilly has come. Because when we started the show, Tilly was Adira. She was the not-so-confident cadet coming on board, but now she's training at Starfleet Academy. She's the confident, mature officer who's giving confidence to another cadet. So yeah, I love the pairing, man. I thought they worked well together. Any thoughts, Cal?
No, I was looking up Dr. Pollard appearances, and it does look like she was in this season in the episode Janal.
When Grace mentions that, or writes that she was mentioned in a whistle speak when Culber sent her a message about the hologram. Full Woodify saying, Reno's great. Proves people still fudge their resume in a utopian future. Yes, indeed. Whatever you need to do to get on board, you must. But yeah, so we find out that we have to go to the Eternal Archive that is in the Badlands.
Did you catch it? They knew what the Badlands is, but Burnham had no experience with the Badlands because the Badlands hadn't been explored in her time.
Oh, that was very good.
I did not catch that.
Yep. Remember, she looks at it, she's like going to the Badlands, and Rainer says, yeah, been there before. And then she's like, oh, well, okay, that must not be a great place. I like subtle things like that where they did their homework.
Yes, agreed.
Trying to remember the name of the archive, the Eternal something archive and the Eternal Gallery and Archive. And that's where we're going to get the next piece of the puzzle. I think Tasha is saying that it's going to be a primarily Burnham episode, kind of trapped in the archive. It's another test to get the next piece of the puzzle for the Progenitor Tech. Should be interesting. I'm down for it. There was one more thing I wanted to mention before we kind of wrap up, give our ratings. They mentioned the spore drive multiple times in this episode. So I'm wondering if they shot this out of order. I think it was somebody on the bridge mentioned powering up the spore drive. And also Burnham mentions, I think it was to Vance, that I thought you wanted us to jump away as soon, use the spore drive to jump away as soon as we dropped off the prisoner. So is it the pathway drive or the spore drive? You know, we were in the engineering science place, engineering, whatever you want to call it, for a lot of this episode. And I just hope that they pick it up and give us some information on how that works. It's probably going to be in a book or something, if I'm being honest. But they just don't even, you know, they just gloss over the details, which, you know, I'm thinking back to our friend Lee Shackford telling us about the writer's manual, you know. You don't have to know everything kind of thing. And they just brush over it several times, but they do mention a spore drive again. So now I'm confused. Is it the pathway drive or the spore drive? And Tasha's saying Disco still has the spore drive. Do they?
Yeah, that's what they do. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought they did too.
They said they were shelling the fact they were not going to try to recreate the spore drive for other ships.
Right.
But they said they had the pathway drive.
Well, they do, but I don't guess they want to rip it out and put it in Discovery.
I thought Discovery has the pathway drive.
Nope.
So we never see anybody in the chamber. They never be like, Book, go get in the chamber. Stamets, go get in the chamber. How are they using it?
They don't. I don't think they have to now.
Well, see, they need to explain that.
Well, I thought they already did. No, this is me. I thought they already did explain that.
So they just put some spores along the path, and then they put it in drive. There you go.
I don't know, but I thought they did not have to use an interface anymore to use the spore drive.
I don't know why I agree with you, Larry, but I do. So that sounds like I've heard that. So I'm going to say cool.
The last I remember, Wingray saying Discovery is keeping the spore drive. I think they just aren't adding it on any other ships. Now, the last I remember them kind of going to depth about it is when, of course, what's the dude named from the last Tarka? Tarka built his own spore drive, and he had to use Book to power his spore drive, but it was a next generation spore drive. That's the last I heard of anything really specifically spore related, but we haven't seen that one time the importance of having Book or having Stamets in relation to the spore drive. So I don't know. I'm going to do some research. This is my research for myself for this week. I'm going to do some research, see if I can find out more, because honestly, I don't think they've mentioned it much on the show itself. Excuse me. Again, this episode, it kind of have all went out of my mind until this episode. Several times they mentioned spore drive. So, okay. Anyway, and everybody in the chat seems to think they still have the spore drive too. So I'm going to have to go with our faithful chat room here. Any other takeaways from this episode, guys, before we kind of wrap up and give our ratings? And I'm going to take this moment while we're waiting on you guys to give your final thoughts. Please, in the chat, what is your rating for this episode out of 5? Please drop it in the chat, and we'll shout it out as we kind of wrap up here. And let's go around a horn and see what we think of this episode. Larry, how would you rate this one, sir?
I'm going to give it a 4.
Larry with 4. Okay. All right. Mr. Jones, how will you rate this episode, sir?
I'm going to give this 4 Discovery Spore Drives out of 5.
Four Discovery Spore Drives. So for me, I think last time I had to give a rating on this in Tasha's chat, I said I would give this a 4-ish. I was really thinking 4.1 or 4.2, but I'm going to go all the way up to 4.5. And that's simply because Tetrazine, though. That's simply because seeing just how the budget put into this episode, I thought it was just a beautiful episode. If you haven't, don't watch it on your computer. Make sure you watch it on your big screen, your big TV. It's just a beautiful episode. And I think the story was very well paced, very well written, and it got us to the next leg of the journey. So that's 4.5. Huge brain heads in Federation headquarters out of 5.
I know Tasha went off. She's trying to give you that stuff. Is that the stuff that McCoy accidentally injected himself with when he jumped through the portal?
Murderers! That's my favorite part of City on the Edge Forever, by the way, when McCoy goes crazy when he jumps through the portal.
And then, talk about not altering time. Nobody even talked about that. What about the old bum that vaporized himself by accident?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oops. I guess it wasn't it was a very small incursion. It there didn't affect go. Anything.
What if that had been Zefram Cochran's ancestor? I mean, we'd have been screwed.
Oh man, let's pick up some comments. Marge is saying 4.5 out of 5 stimulants. Oh, man, Locke, what are you doing, bro? What are you doing? You're not going to like what I'm going to do. Make a break for it. Like, what? That's a terrible plan. That is a terrible plan, Locke.
Here's something nobody pointed out. Locke and Maul were talking awful loud with everybody in the room. And nobody said, hey, they're gonna try to get out. Why, you know? Because they just said they so.
Which further proves that non-security detail is trash. I keep saying it.
I mean, they had them in that little encased field. Is that thing soundproof? Because it's not soundproof when they want to talk to them.
Okay, I've got to say this real quick. Full What If I Lit gives 4 out of 5 7 of limes. I love that.
That's 2 on the nose for me. Come on, Reno. Come on, really. 7 of limes.
Yes, I love that.
And then on the Star Trek Instagram, they released the image showing all the drinks she said in the episode. So, Reno the bartender. Who would have thunk it?
I'm going to do that, man. I swear to God. Hey, Kyle, let's leave Clarence. And he doesn't know we're gone. Clarence's like, yeah, I can hear y'all over there. I know what you said.
You're not whispering low enough. Make a break for it. 4 out of 5 tetracortisone doses from Tasha. We have 4 out of 5 from Rittany. Wayne Gertz is saying McCoy was regular cortisone. This was 3 times bigger. Yes. Locke, what was you thinking, bro? What was you thinking? Yeah. Again, I have to say it was definitely soundproof. Again, I have to say thanks to each and every one of you for being in the chat. It's been a lot of fun. Even getting to the end here, we're kind of picking up some of the stuff we glossed over. But yeah, overall, I think we were all pretty high on this episode. I really enjoyed it. Where do we go next? Where do we go next as we enter the Eternal Gallery and Archive? What's going to happen?
The preview looked real. I look forward because I know the actress who's playing one of the people, and I don't know her, but I've seen her in a lot of stuff. And I was just like, okay, this looks really good.
Was she the race from Enterprise? What's the Zindi? Was she a Zindi?
No, she wasn't a Zindi. I had to look it up, but I love the fact that they almost reminded me kind of like the Guardian, the Sovereigns from Guardians of the Galaxy.
It was almost a little too playful. I'm like, oh, are we going on the cheesy side here? Because it felt very playful in that Ready Room preview. I was like, oh, what are we doing here?
Might get pretty dark. Quick.
And the fact that they said we're going to be like doing this test, it made me think of that that DS9 episode where they're playing hopscotch. It's not hopscotch, I forgot what the name of the game is, but you know the one I'm talking about, where they're going from room to room, they have to remember all the steps. Come on, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, guys. Yeah, I didn't like that episode.
But anyway, we're going to end that, guys. Thank you all for joining. It's been a lot of fun, and until next time, guys, live long and prosper. Thanks for listening to the Discussing Trek podcast. For more information, go to discussingtrek.com/subscribe.
You've been listening to the Discussing Network. Find out more at discussingnetwork.com.
Can I say that like shut up, Wesley? I can just go shut up, Clarence?